So welcome to everybody in person and online. Those of you who are online, I don't actually have a Zoom host tonight, so you'll have to battle it out by yourselves. My solution, kind of a midway thing, is that online, as if you have any questions, I invite you to email me and then I will write you a delightful, long, rambling answer to whatever it is that you have in the wee hours. At least for tonight, we'll go that way. And those of you in the class here, very nice to have you in person. Yes, it's a short 4 week course, and we've got enough time to be able to have some questions and discussion and kind of feel our way through the topic, because it is a really nice introductory topic. It's on Buddhist essentials, ethics, concentration, and wisdom. And these are, I mean, they're three skills that we actually have to learn. They don't necessarily come naturally or easily. It'd be great if they did, but they don't necessarily work that way. And so it's based on a text by, famous kind of Buddhist teacher, Gyantse Rinpoche. And he wrote this amazing book, Practicing the Path. And so I have a handout of his summary of this topic for future in-depth, for your future reference. These three essentials are, they're essential for just daily life, just to be able to get through life. We know what happens when we just forget everything and what a strain it is to try and remember everything all the time. Like, you need to go at 10 to 8. Now, we'll probably all remember for you to go at 10 to 8. But, if we developed our concentration, then effortlessly we'd remember. So, just ordinary ways like that's really important. But these, as Buddhist essentials, ethics, concentration, and wisdom are called three higher trainings. And so they have a much broader scope and possibility for us. So, we can think, well, what if we could develop all of our life skills, not just for a good life, a good career, harmonious family, but complete liberation from the ups and downs of life, from the daily grind of existence, from all suffering, all problems, from the causes of all problems. So that's really what these Buddhist essentials are. So we're going to have a look at how they make our life better now, how they can also help us completely overcome cyclic existence, or that kind of the rat race or the grind, or whatever, this mortal coil, as they call it, and how with these really essential skills, this is what we need to become liberated for, like complete peace, liberation, nirvana. These are the skills. So not just for a better life now, but for actual complete liberation. So we're going to have, in this first class, we've got about three short little meditations. So you get an experience of what we're talking about. And then for the next three classes, then we'll go more in depth into what it's all about and what we can do. I've got some notes, which I will hand out in a bit. These notes are also online for those of you that they're in the members area, or if you get a package, or else just email me and I can send you a PDF. So we'll have these notes. There's the kind of the root text, and I'll see if I can get a Zoom host for the following week so that they can relay questions. How we normally like to start is actually just with a short meditation to settle down and become present and to focus our intention. So let's do that. And the first thing when we meditate is to adjust our posture, and then we adjust our mind. So posture-wise, if you're all on chairs, it's good to have your hips a little bit higher than your knees so that the circulation doesn't get cut off behind your knees. So you might need a little cushion to put under your feet, and try and feel really grounded and stable. So a lot like Maitreya Buddha over here sitting on a chair. So you feel it's a really strong posture. Try to have your feet planted firmly on the ground. And the Buddhist way of putting the hands is right palm on top of left, with the thumbs lightly touching and in the lap. So this is really nice because what it represents is our wisdom supports our good-heartedness. And the thumbs together is like the two truths and also our concentration. It also means that our posture is very, what's the word? It's consolidated. It's like a self-sustaining system. So hands in the lap if it's comfortable, elbows a little out from the torso, and to straighten the spine, imagine from the inside that there is a thread of light running through your body just in front of your spine and coming out the crown of your head and just gently being pulled upwards. And you should be able to feel your posture naturally straighten and become more aligned. You'll find that your head will just slightly tilt forward. So tuck the chin in, relax the jaw, put a slight smile on your lips, and rest your tongue on the upper palate behind the top teeth. Release any tension from around the eyes and let your eyes just be lightly closed, or even with just a sliver of light coming in. And bring your focus gently to the breath, becoming aware of the rising and falling of the breath. No need to control the breath in any way. Just follow the in-breath, the slight pause, the out-breath, and the slight pause. And try and keep your focus gently just on the entire duration of the breath as you breathe in and breathe out. And as you try and do this, you might find yourself becoming distracted. That's natural. We're constantly drawn away from our object of focus just by our senses. And we're also drawn away by mental activity. So whenever you notice, just notice, oh, thinking, feeling, the sound. And bring your focus back to the breath. With any distractions, just notice and name. And as your mind begins to settle down, just from just watching the breath, everything coming to rest, just like autumn leaves come to rest. Then bring to mind, what's the reason that you've come along tonight? Was there anything in particular? There might be a particular life issue, might be a goal, a question. And we can use that as our starting point to expand our purpose so it becomes all-encompassing, that our initial curiosity can lead us to developing our wisdom entirely. and our initial sense of kindness or wishing to help either oneself or others, all sentient beings, this too we can develop to its ultimate. Like the two wings of the bird, wisdom and compassion, or just simply curiosity and kindness. So, with the sense that this course, that you're doing this course for your own ultimate benefit, and also that that may in turn benefit all living beings, everyone you come into contact with, and eventually every single living being, with this really vast intention. Then take a nice deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth, and bring your focus back to the room. Okay, so for our Buddhist essentials, a few books also that I could recommend. So this first one, Practicing the Path, Yangtze Rinpoche, it's a commentary on Lamrim Chenmo, which means the graduated path to enlightenment. And for a beginner's book, even though it's quite a thick-looking book, it's really readable. It's really good for beginners as a Lamrim, as an overview text of the entire path from here to enlightenment. The middle book, Ancient Wisdom, Modern World, Ethics for a New Millennium, that's by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And it's probably one of the best books from a secular point of view. So if you're not religious or not Buddhist, it's something that everybody can relate to. It really pulls it all together. And then the third one, Foundation of Buddhist Practice, that's by His Holiness Dalai Lama and a Western nun, Venerable Thupten Chodron. And it's part of a series that's really incredible. And in terms of a beginner's Buddhist book, couldn't do better than that. So it's only maybe 1 or 2 years old, very contemporary writing, contemporary issues, and all the complexities in there. It's not watered down at all, but it's for a Western audience. So our course, the Buddhist Essentials, is based on three higher trainings, and what they are: cultivating ethics, and how if we do cultivate our ethics, this is the main cause for our own sense of happiness and well-being. So while most of the time in our culture, and I know I get sucked into it all the time, we think, oh, our happiness and well-being depends on having more stuff or having a rest, having a holiday, one or the other, isn't it? But actually, if we really want to feel good in our own skin, if we want to feel naturally confident, okay about ourselves, open-hearted, courageous, all of those things, what that's based in is ethics. So it actually creates our happiness. Yangtze Rinpoche says, at the moment, we are bound to cyclic existence because we're under the control of our minds, and our minds are under the control of our delusions. And so we're in this constant state of distraction and disappointment. So training in ethics means that we stop creating more trouble and we create the best conditions for a happy life and can accomplish our goals. The second one, how we overcome distraction with concentration. So without single point of concentration, we can't do anything. We can't kind of learn a computer program. We can't drive without concentration. I mean, there are different forms of concentration. But we certainly can't focus on what matters to us or focus on how to work out a problem. So we really need concentration, but there are so many things that distract us. There's everything from the senses, sights and sounds, but there's also the internal ones from the mind, memories, worries, anticipations. So we need to develop concentration as a skill, and we need ethics and concentration for the third one, to destroy all of the negative seeds that result in suffering. So we need wisdom for this. So to get rid of suffering isn't to get rid of all the triggers of suffering. It's to get rid of the fact that we're triggered. That's the thing. So that's all those seeds within us. And for that, we need wisdom. So the three higher trainings, there's this wonderful analogy of how they're put together that the ethics is like our core strength. So here it's like the torso of that fellow, nice medieval fellow there in the picture. So you need to have a really core strength. Concentration is the two arms. So the concentration is supported by ethics. And wisdom, it's the axe, and it's the axe that cuts the root of suffering. So instead of just like trimming each leaf off the tree, and 27,000 leaves later, there's a whole lot more grown, you just get that axe of wisdom and you cut it off at the root, and it's gone. All the problems are gone. But if anyone's seen funniest home videos, we know what happens if you don't have any core strength and you're just wielding an axe around willy-nilly, you can do a lot of damage. Everyone can laugh at you for, in the best possible scenario, but you can hurt yourself and you can hurt others. If you don't have the support of your ethics, then all the stuff that we learn can just backfire, or we can use it for the wrong ends, or we get corrupted or distracted. And so we don't end up with the result that we were expecting. So we're going to come back to this analogy quite often. They're called higher trainings because the ordinary trainings are just for this life, which it's the minimum that we need, concentration, a sense of ethics to live harmoniously with our neighbors and to be able to develop our wisdom, to know how to lead our life. That's the minimum, but that's not a higher one. So what the higher means is it's focused about getting us out of samsara, getting us out of cyclic existence, so that we don't just have a better day and then have a worse day, a better day and a worse day, and have complete, this lack of control, but we actually get out of that interminable cycle. Okay, so the goal is it can be a personal liberation or nirvana, freedom, emotional freedom, but also it can be, it's the basis for full enlightenment, becoming a Buddha, so also developing all of our qualities to their utmost extent for the benefit of everyone, all living beings. And so with all of these three higher trainings, we can cut the root of suffering forever. So this is from Yangtze Rinpoche. So some people believe that liberation is a special place, a place that has a shape or a color and so forth. Sometimes it's described as resembling a white upside down umbrella or a sun or a moon or a heaven. But in reality, however, true liberation is the state that is attained on the basis of training the mind in the practices of the three higher trainings, training in ethics, training in concentration, and training in wisdom. Just like I said before with the quote, at the moment we are bound to cyclic existence because we are under the control of our minds, and our minds are under the control of our delusions. As a result, we find ourselves in a state of complete distraction all the time, consistently unfocused and unable to apply ourselves to the meaningful pursuits or the spiritual path. The method to overcome this unfortunate state is the practice of the first of the three higher trainings in the training in ethics. However, in order to completely subdue the mind, accomplishing the higher training in ethics alone is not sufficient. So it's not sufficient just to be a good person. It's not enough. It's not enough to lead a good life. We must also develop our minds in meditative concentration. Because without the basis of single-pointed placement and the strength of meditative equipoise, we will be unable to stabilize our realizations and unable to focus our minds on virtue. So without this meditative concentration, what happens is we might work something out, we might have a realization, but then it fades. And then a few years later, the same situation comes up and we go through all this turmoil to work it all out again. And we come to a conclusion and we go, oh, but I knew that. I forgot. So we really need to also stabilize our realization. So they're what comes to our mind in an emergency. And eventually, though, we will find that even developing the mind of higher training and ethics and higher training and concentration is not sufficient. In order to free our minds completely from the control of the delusions and their seeds, we also need to practice the training in higher wisdom. And so that's the wisdom of understanding reality. And that's what Geshe Sherpa was teaching about last week. Did anyone here go to any of Geshe-la's teachings? You did, Liam. And you're still buzzing, obviously. Yeah, so the last two teachings on ultimate truth and relative truth, they were just corkers, weren't they? Amazing. So I'm going to put them up pretty soon on our website for everyone because they're the go-to teachings. So that's the general overview. What questions do you have? Anything that needs clarifying or how it fits in or anything at all? So the mind, there's different levels of mind. And so most of the time we're functioning in our kind of ordinary mind, which is quite reactive. And how we function really depends on the character that we've already developed, our habits, what's happening around us, all sorts of circumstances, inner, external ones and also internal ones. So that mind's really very dependent on circumstances and on our karma, or from a psychological point of view, our personality, our past experiences, our habits. But the most subtle mind that we have is completely pure and untarnished. It's not disturbed by those superficial things. And the nature of our mind on that deepest level is no different from the nature of the Buddha's, the nature of the Buddha's mind. So because of that, then we have a chance to develop. We can actually develop our character all the way into the character of a Buddha. Which basically means it's not like going abracadabra and turning into something else. It basically means removing all of the afflictive emotions and developing all of our positive characteristics, wisdom, love, kindness, patience, all of those things. And so even before we get to that, just being able to have the freedom to remove all of our disturbing and afflictive emotions and all of our confusion. That's liberation, that's peace. And it's possible because of the pure nature of our mind. Very good. Straight to the point question there. Anything else? We have to stop swearing. I'm going to be in real trouble. Yeah, so all of the things that we do and that we focus on have an effect on us, for sure. And so we've got to be proactive about that and choose what kind of effect do I want to have on myself? What kind of effect do you want to have on your mind? When it comes to how we live our life, like if we swear or not, that's a circumstantial thing. In some company, it's highly entertaining. But if it was in the middle of meditation, it would be highly disturbing. So inherently, it's not wrong or right. But there are some things that we'll delve into in the ethics class that are universally acknowledged as being wrong because they hurt. They're hurtful. So no one likes aggression. It's not, it's something that we all recoil from. We don't need any belief to recoil from aggression. So ethics really comes out of just really noticing how living beings are, what matters to them. I would think, though, that competitiveness or ambition, they're not necessarily bad things. So lots of games have that in them. And it is possible to be highly ambitious and highly competitive without it being a negative thing. It's just very rare to be taught how to do that. So, are you a Dungeons and Dragons player?
Yeah. How did you know?
Dice. Dice game. It's like, okay, otherwise you'd just say like poker or something, you know. As a wild aside there, Liam, when I read this book about, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and then all of the Magic the Gathering, that game that came out of it, that whole community, I was so impressed by that, that that's how come I invented our Afflictions to Perfections game.
Cool.
That's where it came
I still
from.
play that game.
So there you go. Okay. So, higher training and wisdom. Let's start with the tricky one first, with a quote from His Holiness. We are at the center of all of our troubles. It is therefore best to work at understanding our true nature first. So, this means that rather than starting with theory, with the theory of what's the universe and how long, when did it start, and all of these things, if you're going to start with theory, start with our nature, because it's us who suffers. So let's start where it really matters first. Rather, and in that way we can check everything that we learn against our own experience. Check it with reasoning and logic, but also against, does that accord with what's happening to me? And if I approach it in this way, does it work? Does it work for me? Rather than just an abstract theory or a belief. Because if we start from the external first, we can get very distracted with a whole lot of red herrings of just really interesting stuff that has no bearing on our life or our happiness. You know, the objects of knowledge are infinite. They never stop. We will never know enough. So in that case, then what's it worth focusing on? And so we want to focus on something that's going to really help us. Also, why we need to look at what our true nature is, how we exist, how we function, is that if we don't understand that, we don't have the confidence to be able to work on ourselves as human beings. Then we just relying on if we're nice or we're kind or we're compassionate. But what happens when we let ourselves down, or what happens when other people are destructive or nasty? How do we fit all that in and not lose it ourselves? So all of this comes from really understanding our nature, our potential, and what it is that clouds it. How come if we've all got a Buddha nature potential, how come there's all these destructive, horrible people in the world? How does that happen? So we've really got to have that understanding first. And how come we might be sincere one day and just full of resentment and revenge the next? How does that happen? So to free our minds completely from the control of our afflictive emotions and all of their imprints and reverberations, we need wisdom. And it's not just any wisdom, but the wisdom that realizes the nature of reality. The result of this wisdom is the complete cessation of suffering, the cessation of all delusions, afflictions, and their seeds. It also means that whatever we study, whatever we study, our wisdom won't degenerate. We'll have it focused on this real wish for liberation. So everything will focus into that. Instead of getting distracted by myriad things, everything comes into our wish for liberation by understanding our nature and the nature of reality. So what's the wisdom? The wisdom is the wisdom realizing emptiness. And this is like probably the most challenging thing that we'll ever come across. If it was a no-brainer, we would have had it by now. We'd all be liberated. So it's not because you're not intelligent. It's because it's really hidden. It's counterintuitive. So the wisdom realizing emptiness and the other side of the coin, like the two sides of the coin, one side is wisdom realizing emptiness, which is subtle and difficult. The other one is understanding dependent arising. how everything depends on everything else. You know, it's circumstantial. There are causes and conditions that are at play. You change one of them and everything changes. So that's easier to get at. We can find many, many examples of this. You just have to look at the news. You change one thing in the world and everything else in the world changes. You know, we're not separate. We're not independent. We're highly you can't separate us actually from anyone else in the world, any other beings or the world. But we don't really remember that very often. We don't remember that how everything exists is highly dependent and is constantly changing, and depends how we look at it, depends how we interpret it. So, you know, the stock market just fell. And so I remember when they said the last time the stock market fell this much was at the beginning of COVID. So I remember at the beginning of COVID when the stock market fell, and there were some people just freaking out, crying like bunnies in the headlights, just like it's the huge tragedy. And then I had two friends, they were really happy. They were like, they were just buying more stocks because they're like, this is the time. So it just depends. It depends how you're looking at things. It depends if you panic. Depends how much attachment you have. Depends if you're looking short-term or long-term. So, you know, the news is trying to make us feel better now by saying, you know, COVID, the stocks went down, and then by one year, 4 months later, by June 21, they'll back up to the same level again. You know, if you look at it over one day, it's a catastrophe. You look at it over a few months, it's a catastrophe. You look at it over 1.5 years, actually you look over 2 years, better than you were before. So you can't say which one's real. That's the thing. But if we fixate on one and go, this one's real, it's at our detriment because we disregard everything else. So dependent arising then leads us to a realization that things don't inherently exist. And so that's the wisdom realizing emptiness, empty of inherent existence. And this is a process of analysis that we have to come back to again and again and again until it becomes habitual, so that we can have this habit of questioning how things appear in our life, so that when things go wrong and we go, oh no, that habit comes up and goes, hang on a second, is it really like this? Is there another way to look at it? Are there other things at play? Have I missed something out? And we relax and we don't make it any worse and we find the best way through. So that's just the immediate result. There's a huge much more that we can say about this training in wisdom, and we're going to do it in the following weeks. But just for tonight, what are the things that we need wisdom about just at the moment? What are the most important things that we need to know about or know how to approach just in life at the moment? What are the challenges that we need wisdom for? To keep up with the changing world. It is constantly changing. Someone's son just got out of prison. He'd been in prison for 9 years, and I just thought, so much has changed since then. Like just QR codes and phones, and how you get money out of the bank. It's like how you get on a bus. All changed. Yeah. What else do we need wisdom for? Interaction with families. Does it get more complicated as time goes on? It does, doesn't it? More complex, yes. Yeah, so if we had some wisdom, at the very least, we could not make things worse. And at the best, we could be the good influence on the family, yeah. Yes. And there's nothing worse than really wanting to help others and not knowing what to do, not knowing what advice to give, isn't it? It's just heart-wrenching. Yeah. What else? What else do we need wisdom for?
Can I ask something sort of back to
Yeah,
that?
sure.
So, to have the wisdom, you need knowledge of what?
Yes.
Would
Ha ha ha.
that sort of be one, one without the other? If you sort of, it's the same. If you don't have the knowledge of what you do, you just be doing to improve
Yeah.
yourself. And again, and
Oh,
eventually
you are
you're going to.
so spot on. That's my exact next paragraph. Absolutely right. So as beginners, there are three wisdoms that we develop that are really essential for us, like right now. So the first one's called the wisdom of listening. The second is the wisdom of reflection, and the third is the wisdom of meditation. So what these mean, the wisdom of listening means like gathering the information. So coming to class, finding the books and reading the books, good books, checking your sources. It's where all of our curiosity and intellect comes in. We have an interest. And it's really good to have it as a habit, to have this wisdom of listening and enjoying it. So even when you listen to things and you don't get it, still enjoying it instead of giving up. Because this really kicks in for when things go wrong. Many times we just collapse. It's quite rare to think, hey, has this ever happened to anybody else? How did they respond? Especially if we have like a bout of depression or become suicidal, we get so incredibly deep into our thoughts, but very rarely does a thought come up of, I know I'm not the first person in the world to experience this. What did the other people do? How did they solve it? What did they say? To have that kind of initial curiosity to ask. I mean, there's so many places where we can look for wisdom that's, the experience of others that we have to draw on. But when things get really bad for ourselves, it's quite rare that that's the first thing that we So the wisdom of listening, I think really for beginners, it's to encourage ourselves to just always be curious and not worry if you don't know stuff, because that's what's going to get us to find out. But I don't know if it's Queensland's school system or whatever, but to not know things is something almost like a shameful thing. You're nodding your heads. Like I grew up in a, I went to an alternative school as a young child, and I think that really saved me because we were instilled with this like just rampant curiosity. And then I came to Queensland and discovered everyone hid if they didn't know about something. Curiosity is the starting point for it. Then we have wisdom of reflection. So that's where we've gathered all of the stuff and then we really sit with it and contemplate it and have that inner dialogue where you run scenarios. What if I did this and what if I did that? Maybe play devil's advocate. You try and personalize it. What would I do in a situation? What if I did those things? How would that work out? So you become really familiar with what you've learned, but you try and personalize it. And a lot of that we just do in our conversation, talking with really good friends. We'll talk it through and become familiar with it. And I found in this stage, this one, the wisdom of reflection. In the first one of listening, we really want the in-depth stuff. We're like, oh, do you have anything more complicated or more in-depth about all of this? Then when it comes to applying it, it's like, do you have anything more simple? This is really challenging. I'm just a baby at this. Just give me one thing to do. So there's a really big difference between the intellectual understanding that we get. Then the moment we start trying to apply it in our life, that's a whole nother thing. It's almost like we're back to being babies again. It's so hard. So that's okay. That's part of the wisdom of reflection. It's where we begin internalizing. The third one, wisdom of meditation or familiarization, becoming familiar, means that we become familiar with this new understanding that we have and a new integration. And this is where the mind transformation happens, the thought transformation, so that when we're in the same situation next time, we automatically have a totally different reaction. Instead of automatically just going back to what we've always done, now from integrating it all, sitting with it, meditating on it, really becoming familiar with this new way of being and thinking, now our instinctual responses change. So that comes from the wisdom of meditation or familiarization. And so then when things happen, you have that family dinner, you know what to do. So probably the thing to remember about these three is that, especially if you're really well educated, you might think that just reading and understanding is enough, but there's a huge gulf between understanding and applying it in our life. And sometimes you can understand intellectually more and more and just become more and more miserable. And it's because we haven't integrated it. So that's why I need those three wisdoms: listening, reflection, and meditation. So, top question. shall we do a little meditation? Here's the one. I just found this really wonderful slide, Cinema Nirvana. So just as an example, bringing our focus inwards, and we can think about, just like in a movie, even though we know it's fiction, our emotions still arise. We still cry, we still get scared, we still laugh. But we have that balance between knowing it's not entirely real and yet interacting with it. And when things get really scary, we remind ourselves, oh, it's just a movie. It appears like this, but it doesn't exist like this. So what about the movie of our life? If one day we are really tired, we're quite cross, easily exasperated, lose our patience, what's our reality on a day like that? What kind of things do we notice first? What kind of things stick with us? How in turn do we respond? What kind of tone of voice? What kind of mannerisms? And we're tired and cross. And what kind of responses come back to us? How does that make us feel? Or what about a day where we've just had some really good news? We found out some fantastic thing happened to our best friend. We achieved something we've been long striving for. What's our reality then? What kind of things do we notice about the day then? What sticks with us? How's our communication? How do we treat ourselves and others? And in turn, how do we feel? What kind of cycle happens then? And today's movie, how intensely we feel about the events of today, the kind of theme of today, but how will we feel about it in a month or in a year? So, what was today like really? Is it a solid fixed reality? Or is our movie of the day made on the fly? What can change? And in what direction would you like today's movie to change? So then you can bring your focus back to the room. All right, just a little bit of time then on the next one, high training and concentration. So this is a little quote from Gelug Rinpoche. Once we begin, we should continue every day until we reach our goal. If conditions are perfect, we can do this in as little as 3 months or so. So what he's talking about is achieving single-pointed concentration. So I find at first I think, oh, concentration is single point of concentration with no distractions, to be able to focus on something for like 2 or 3 hours without one single distraction, and to do it without effort, to do it, with alertness seems impossible. But then, I think about, say, how people train for the Olympics, and they spend 4 years. Day and night, everything is focused on this one thing to become the very best in the world of how many billion people. And it's possible people do it. So if we put that much effort into attaining single point of concentration, it'd be a snap, honestly. So we do need concentration, and we need a particular kind of concentration. Concentration means that we remember what we're focusing on and we're not distracted. It also means that we have a quality of concentration, that our mind is clear and alert. So it's not just kind of going all blank and kind of zoning into, so then we've got no distractions, but we're not really focused on the actual thing. So there's kind of two things happening here. We're focused, we're free of distractions, but we're also clear. So we have distractions that come from external things, mostly from the senses. So that's why we want a nice quiet place. I can remember studying for a course where our neighbors were renovating their metal garage. And I'm like, I was really challenged, because there's the circular saw cutting metal. I'm like, I know I've got really good focus, but this is a bit beyond me. It was hard. So there's the external things, but I think probably the internal ones are the bigger challenge, aren't they? Thoughts, memories, feelings, tiredness. So we have to pace ourselves physically and mentally. We have to try and remove those external distractions as much as possible, and then also try and remove the internal distractions. So, how to do that? Is to set up a motivation that is altruistic, it's good-hearted, and it's a big motivation. And within that, it's kind. Most of the time, we can slide into being really hard on ourselves, like, come on, concentrate, you know? But actually, we've got to feel good to be able to concentrate. We have to be in a safe space externally, but also internally. So we've got to be kind to ourselves and encouraging to know how to relax and to actually enter into it. So again, Yangtze Rinpoche says, usually our minds are like cities of distractions, giving rise to countless superstitions and conceptual thoughts. Calming this and focusing on virtuous objects is the basis for cultivating realizations. Without this, it's just intellectual and we will still suffer. So we have to be able to calm our mind so that everything that we understand becomes part of our experience. So it goes from intellect to actually being a lived experience. And to do that, we've got to make some space. So how we do that, setting our motivation, a higher motivation. So that means that it's try and have it extend as far possible as you can. So at the minimum, complete liberation from suffering and all of its causes, at least for oneself. If not for everybody else, because if you just go, I just want to learn how to concentrate, or I just want to get over this problem, what happens is you get over the problem and then it's finished. Your meditation practice drops off. So we've got to have a much bigger goal in mind. And then to remember the benefits of concentration. So I'm sure that's how the Olympic athletes, the only way they could possibly train isn't by focusing on how hard it is. They've got to be focusing on what they want to achieve, the benefit, the goal. So that's also got to keep in mind. And so then what do we focus on? So the Buddhist meditation is very much about focusing on an internal object, rather than one that's external on the senses. So even if we're focusing on the Buddha, for instance, a Buddha statue or a picture, you look at it so that you get an idea of the image, but then you close your eyes and you bring that image in your mind so that it's an internal experience. Because what we're trying to do, the whole direction of things normally of us just goes outwards. So we're trying to bring it inwards. So at first, your main difficulty will be to get hold of the mental image. Even getting a blurred image is difficult. However, you have to persist. Try to cultivate clarity and a correct level of tightness while guarding against problems such as wondering or depression. Just sit and pursue the meditation while watching for distortions. Sometimes the object becomes too clear and you break into mental wandering, and at other times it becomes dull and you lose it to sleep or torpor. So it's having this really nice balance. And we'll go into some more techniques in one of the further classes. So maybe shall we do another little meditation on focus? And this one goes from an external focus to an internal one. Just so you get what we're talking about. Okay. So again, settle your posture. Take a nice deep breath. Make sure you're breathing from deep in your lungs. And at first, we're going to concentrate on sound. So starting from the sounds very close in. Say within your own body, the sound of your breath that you can hear through the nostrils. Maybe the rustle of your clothes as you're breathing. Then gently extend your awareness outwards to the sounds just within this room, the air conditioning, maybe someone moving their foot. Maybe a rustle of paper. Then extend your awareness to just outside of this room, to the traffic as it passes by. Maybe if there's any wind outside or some wildlife. Then extend your awareness to not just outside this room, but to the whole suburb, to where the sounds arise from. To the outer reaches of Brisbane. Outwards further to the vibration of the earth. Out even further to the solar system. Our focus becomes very expansive. Our awareness encompassing all of space. Aware both of the spaciousness and all the varied arisings of sounds within that space. This entire experience happening within your mind, limitless spaciousness. A fundamentally pure state of mind, unsullied by thought, just in its own state, in which everything can arise and fall away. And then gradually bring your focus back to this room, recognizing you're still within that infinite spaciousness, but now focusing on just a few particulars, sitting here on the chair. Take a nice deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. You might have been able to notice how we go from focusing on our senses to then a mental awareness. So a lot of concentration is being able to develop the skill in being able to focus our mind in whatever way that we want to for however long we want. Just like we might have a skill in how to drive a short distance, how to drive a long distance, how to fix the car, all of those different things. So we have a skill of being able to use our mind and our concentration as a tool, as an internal technology. Okay, last one, higher training in ethics. So here's the quote from Nagarjuna: if a container is broken, how can it hold anything? If our ethics are broken, how can we develop positive qualities? So ethics are the very foundation of all the qualities that we develop within ourselves. So this basically means that we have to live our ethics. We have to embody them. We can't just say, I believe in this, and go and do that. We actually have to embody our ethics. And so that's like the container. We are the container. And so if our ethics are broken, nothing else, any of the good things that we do, they lose their power. So we just think, for instance, someone who has a double standard, if they say one thing and then they do another thing, even if they've done some good things, it kind of tarnishes everything, doesn't it? And it loses its power. We especially find this with people in positions of power. Teachers and doctors and people that do a huge amount of good work for the world, artists, movie directors, and then if we find out that they've done some really horrible things in their private life, it makes it everything's tarnished, makes it difficult to see their movies. Everything that they've taught us gets a sour taste in our mouth. It's like it really ruins things. So if we make a promise or a vow, or we've committed ourselves to someone and then we break that commitment, that's like breaking the container. We can't go, oh, I didn't do that. It's broken. So we can put it back together again. Maybe we can build a new container, but we have to start afresh because that one's gone. That one's broken. So this higher training in ethics, it really is, it's a core strength. It is the thing that gives us confidence and courage, having ethics. So I used to think having confidence and courage just meant telling yourself be brave, but no, it's a result. It comes from something. What it comes from is being really comfortable in your own behavior and your own ethics, so that someone can blame you for something, and if you didn't do it, it doesn't bother you, it doesn't ruffle you. People can disagree with what you do, but if you know this is an ethical thing to do, and I'm going to do what's right, even regardless if everyone disapproves of me or if the family thinks I'm an idiot or whatever it is, you still have the confidence to do it. Easier said than done, isn't it? Really. This one, it's really tricky. Yeah, I think so. And this is really tricky because so much of our lifestyle is convoluted and complex. Like I was even just reading about how people are wanting to boycott American goods from the USA, but we can't because everything online is owned by American companies. Is like, we're so inextricably bound up with all of the activity in the world, good and bad, with mining and with wars and but also with education and with hospitals, and we're all bound up in it. So it's really complex. So I think we just start with what we can and start up close with who's right in front of us. Because it's no good thinking I'm going to be ethical about the world and then being really mean to our family. We've got to start with who we are responsible for and involved with day to day. And some things we can do and some things we can't. But doesn't mean that we have to give up. It's the long game then of trying to change things. I found a lot of, I mean, for a lot of my life, I've found, ethics mostly seem to be, people just change them according to how they're feeling about things. They don't seem to have much of a foundation. And I've never really liked just rules for a rule's sake. I need to be convinced that something is worthwhile or why something's wrong, why something's right. And so just being convinced with being told because this is how we've always done it or or it's rude, I'm like, well, who cares if it's rude? If it's right, doesn't matter. So this is where the wisdom comes in of really analyzing where does this come from? Is it a cultural thing? So, for instance, Liam, you were saying about swearing. When I first came to Lunbury Temple Centre, I swore like a trooper, and everybody that I knew swore like a trooper. They're all musicians and performers and wordsmiths, and so I mean.
That creates swear words.
Creator swear words. They had the app swear like Shakespeare. I mean, everybody did it. So in that situation, yeah. But then when I came to Lunbury Tumba Centre, I found it really tricky how to speak, and I would be saying things, and people would just be like looking at me going. And I'm like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And it's just things are coming out of my mouth wrong. So a lot of ethics are circumstantial like that. It really depends on how it's received. And that depends on the person. Depends on the culture. You do. They are very, very connected. That's right. Because we can, if we don't have the initial determination to act well, kindly, wisely, then we'll just be reactive and then we find ourselves having done things that later on we regret. That's right. So we need that concentration to remember and to remember in the heat of the moment. So when someone's yelling at me or gives me the finger in the traffic, am I just going to give them back the finger straight away just out of habit? So you need concentration to come in and go, hang on, I'm remembering here what I'm supposed to do. Ethics, though, also has a very long-term effect on us, that if our conscience really is clean, if we've done the best that we can, even if we've stuffed up, but we've really been sincere about it. We can be at peace with ourselves. So it means we're less paranoid. We're less paranoid of others. We're less distrustful of others where we don't need to be. Yes, it is. So when we notice we've stuffed up, I mean, the Buddhist terminology, it's really nice because we say we've made a mistake. And so mistakes can be fixed. And so part of it is recognizing that we made a mistake. That in itself is really hard, isn't it? Because most of the time we're going to go, no, I meant to do that, or no, I was right, or we cover it up, or we hide it because we're embarrassed, all of these things. So, yep, own it, I made a mistake. And part of that is you have a regret. So the regret is twofold. One is the regret for what's happened, the consequences. We regret that. But we also regret it for how it's affected us, the effect that it had on us. Karmically as well, it has an effect. So regret for oneself and a regret for others. And a regret is really different from guilt. Because a regret goes, oh, I wish I hadn't done that because I know the consequences for me and I'm know what happened with you, and I'm sorry. But you can only experience regret if you have the courage to do so. And the only way you can have the courage to do so is if you know you can do something about it. So that's the real operative thing. And so in the Buddhist tradition, there is a way of purifying mistakes. So, I mean, many cultures have ways of repentance, saying sorry, of ways of making amends. There's all different things, and there's a very comprehensive way of purifying negativities within Buddhism, and part of it's that regret, and then to do an equal action that's equally positive to counterbalance the negative one. So some things need really big positive actions, and others just need a I'm sorry. You may never be able to undo the mistake, but you can certainly make as much a positive impact into the world and your life as the negative one. And then you also have to make a determination not to do the mistake again. So we can't be serial offenders. We've got to go, I'm not going to do it again. Or if you know you're pretty weak and you might bust out, then you go, I'm not going to do it again for a specific amount of time. And so then that way, it's like being in training, we grow our strength of how to not do the thing again. That whole process of purification, it's called the four R's. The regret, there's refuge or reliance on something bigger and better than us to guide us, to get us back on track. The remedy, and resolve not to do it again. So all of those is really quite a different track than from guilt. Because guilt is where you've done a mistake and then you think, therefore I've done a bad thing, therefore I am bad. And that's wrong. That's not how things are. You've done something bad, but you are not bad. But immediately we go into that. We do that even when we're trying to learn something new, and we stuff it up and we're a bit embarrassed and we feel like we are an idiot, isn't it? I don't know how to do something, therefore I am an idiot, rather than I just don't know how to do something. We add this judgment back onto it. So that's something we have to really look out for, to not go down that track of feeling guilty. The ethics comes from understanding ourselves and others, and it also means that we can see when other people stuff up or act really badly, or their ethics just go to pieces, it's because they are under the control of their afflictive emotions. They're not under the control of all their good qualities. They've lost control of their mind. And so that way we can stop hating them. Yes, so that kind of understanding means it guards us from social reactivity. It guards us from retaliating towards others, which is equally important, not to make things worse. Also, you know, with ethics, so even if you break the ethics, you know, like you break a plate, it's broken. You can't say, oh, I didn't break it or I didn't mean to. No, it is. But then there's a Japanese tradition of putting the broken bowls back together with beautiful gold. It's got some amazing Japanese name. Wabi-sabi, is it?
Kintsugi.
Kintsugi.
We really like that.
It's so nice. That
gold.
That from the, well, what's the goal? It's our Buddha nature. It comes through. So how do we learn? We've actually broken something and we put it together in a new way, that through the trauma of stuffing up, that's how we can learn the very best things, and really it makes us a better person. That's if we do it. Other times it's just lays there like broken shards. That's it, just keeps on hurting people. Oh, 10 to 8. Bing, bing, bing. Thank you for coming. Take care. Oh, good on you. Concentration. Double stars for you. So the basis of ethics is to be able to cultivate equanimity. So cultivating equanimity with these three pictures here, This kind of represents the three ways that we can categorize our relationships: friends, enemies, strangers. So the friend, the lovely warm feeling, the strangers, that was, I typed into Google meh, you know, MEH, and this is what came out for Google Images, meh. It does, doesn't it? And then enemies, this, you know, this scary, violent, aggressive guard dog. Okay, so we've got a little bit of time. Shall we do our last little meditation on this one to give us an idea of equanimity? So again, nice deep breath. Let out any stale air from the lungs. Another one. We're going to do this meditation to develop a balanced attitude towards others, to encourage harmonious relationships. So imagine some of your friends, those that you really care for, you feel really warmly towards. You're happy when good things happen to them. You wish them well, you'd do anything to help them. And feel that warmth in your heart, how you feel towards them, and how that love and care that you have is a good feeling. And so feel it within your body as warmth spreading from your heart throughout your whole body. And then with strangers. So remembering in the beginning, all of our friends, they started off as strangers, but we got to know them. They started to matter to us. We learned their backstory. We started to understand them. And the same with the strangers. If something happens on the other side of the world, we barely blink our eyes. But if it happens on our street or to our neighbours, it has much stronger effect on us, that vicinity of me and mine. We can recognise that just for happenstance, we could have actually become friends with those people on the other side of the world. Those strangers could become close to us just like our current loved ones. So feel that love and warmth in your heart spread towards them, encompass them as well. Those who are not yet friends. And then thinking of the enemies, bring to mind a couple of people that might be really angry or aggressive, and recognize how actually there's no angry person or aggressive person, but they've showed you an angry face, an aggressive behavior. And behind that is pain. Behind that is the complexity of afflictive emotions, the suffering. As you see below the angry face to the suffering beneath, you develop a fierce concern in your heart. and feel that care and concern as warmth that flows to them and releases them from their emotional bondage. And so, to draw this meditation to a close, dedicate that your efforts can develop a sense of care and kindness to all beings, regardless of our current relationship. That we stay safe physically, but in our heart, we keep everyone close. That they matter because they have feelings. And dedicate to being able to bring about harmonious relationships between ourselves and others, and eventually for all living beings. And then a nice deep breath in through the nose and through the mouth. So this one's quite a challenging meditation. It's one to come back to again and again. It's a goodie though. So conclusion, we have our three higher trainings. Now you know what the image is about. What are the two arms? Concentration. What's the axe? Wisdom, and what does it cut?
Solutions.
The delusions, the very root of the delusions. We're not just like trimming leaves here. We're going to trim a little bit of resentment, a little bit of confusion, and oh my God, there's 10 more resentments and there's 10 more confusions. Where do they come from? No, right at the root. And okay, so, and what makes it all strong? The core strength, ethics, that's right. So this one we can remember the ethics. The ethics is to be embodied, isn't it? We embody our ethics. We live them. We don't talk them, we live them. So that's it. And then really it becomes a core strength. So the three higher trainings, those three, ethics, concentration, wisdom, they're for a good life now, but mostly therefore, our complete liberation. We've got to keep that in mind. Otherwise, it's just going to be, it'll just be over before it's done, if we have that short term. We've got to go for the long one. Ethics, the foundation for achieving everything in life, including, harmonious relationships, all the success in life, long-term success, and including being able to help others. Concentration. So, concentration, the two arms. On one hand, love and kindness. On the other, the wisdom, interdependence. And they work together to help with the concentration. So, like you said, Suzanne, they all three work in together and support each other. And the wisdom, cutting the root of suffering. So, we've got time for a couple more questions. Anything, any last outstanding matters? Anything that needs clarification or yes. Ray, is it Raymond?
Yeah,
Raymond, yeah. Which is worse? So when we act unskillfully, we always harm ourselves. And sometimes it harms others as well. But like for instance, with anger always harms us. Whether it harms the other person, sometimes it does, other times they just laugh at us. They have great glee in our torment. So, which one is worse? Probably the one to us because it means we perpetuate the cycle. So, they really, I think they're two different types of regret and they work differently. So, in one way, our enlightened self-interest will go, stop harming ourselves. If we want to stop suffering, we've got to stop doing all those negative things. It's just a no-brainer. And then the other one, if when we see what we've done and it's, say it's made someone cry, and then we feel sorry. So that's for some people, but it's not for other people. Other people, they relish someone crying. That's how they get their sense of power. But we can all understand how it affects us in the long term. So it's probably the starting point, I think. But then, of course, this is a Mahayana Buddhist center. We're on a Mahayana path, meaning that what really galvanizes us is, for ourselves, oh, we might just, let ourselves suffer a bit. But then we look around and we see everybody else is suffering and we can't bear that. Our family, our pets, our friends, our neighbors, the world, it's just too much. We've got to do something. So we're galvanized by others' welfare. And that gives us often a lot more energy than if we're just going to do it for ourselves, which we kind of just can put off for a bit. So it kind of depends. I think they're different stages. Yeah. Liberation. Yeah. Yeah, so the motivation, it's important to have that really big motivation. So the minimum one is that wherever we end up next after this life, we don't want it to be any worse than this. So even if we're not a Buddhist, that's what we're aiming for. No, we're worse. At least this good or better. And so then when we start thinking about, well, what is that? It's not necessarily a place. Mostly it's going to be our state of mind. What's our state of mind? Because we can be in a great place and have a miserable mind. So our state of mind, our mind has to be free and calm and clear. And so that really is aiming for liberation or nirvana, a state of peace where our mind is at peace. There's no more delusions, distractions, afflictions, nothing to cause suffering anymore. That's actual freedom. That's not circumstantial. Mostly we just feel good when our circumstances are calm. But even then we mightn't feel good. So the biggest motivation though is even more than that, more than liberation or nirvana. The biggest motivation to have is to attain this state of peace and have developed all of our, oh, she's gone now, character, all of our potential, all of our skills, so we can help others. And the perfect way to do that is to become a Buddha. Because a Buddha has omniscience, they can see exactly what to do. They don't have to scratch their head and go, oh, what should I do here? They just know spontaneously, perfectly, effortlessly, without ever losing any energy. So if we have that motivation and we have it with the understanding that it's possible, scientifically, mind science, it's possible because of our nature, and we really understand that our nature is no different from the nature of the Buddha, then we'll be galvanized. Then we're like, let's do it. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you do it? And so, with that kind of motivation, it sees us through the ups and downs when our energy lags, it's tidal, our energy goes up and down. We can feel good, we can feel bad, but we still have that motivation, keeps us going. So, equally, we're all equal inside. But then when we're interacting, it's all circumstantial, isn't it? So for someone who's being kind, you can help in a very peaceful way. For someone who's being very destructive and aggressive, you're going to have to be strong to stop the aggression. But see, this is the thing. This is where ethics comes in, that you can be strong and stop the aggression with concern, with care in your heart, or you can stop aggression with hate and retaliation. You can st so, and all of that is to do with your motivation. So that's why we've got to really work on the motivation. So it doesn't mean that we don't do things to try and help the world. For sure, we have to, and we've got to be really skilled in it. We've got to have a whole lot of different skills. And ethics comes into that too, that so that we can be absolutely certain that what we're doing is coming from good-heartedness and never from an afflictive emotion. That's really hard. So you'll just have to come back for the next class then for the ethics, because we're going to dive right into that So again, we've set our motivation at the beginning. Let's dedicate. Let's dedicate that, recall your reason for coming along tonight, your starting point, whatever that was, and then how we extended our purpose for being here for altruistic motivation to benefit ourselves and others. Not just ordinary benefit, but the ultimate long-lasting benefit of bringing ourselves to a state of peace and wisdom and bringing everyone out of their suffering and into a lasting state of happiness as well. So let's dedicate everything that we learn. It goes towards that. And that means that then throughout the week, day to day, it will all be flavored in that direction.